No, I'm right. The podcast that uncovers the origin stories of some of the biggest names in sports, media, music, and so much more. Nick Durst here along with Joe Calabrese and Joe. We're excited to welcome another member to the exclusive two-time guest club with us here today.
We'll be welcoming a rock and roll man into the two-man club. But yes, he's got a lot going on right now, and with football season coming back, he'll be talking about his Giants as well. But we welcome back Constantine Maroulis. And Constantine, the last time that I saw you in person was last year. It was towards the end of last summer. And we were at the Yankees game. And you were kind of walking around the stadium. And we were walking around the upper levels. And I just kind of happened to catch you. And we took a picture together. How fun was that? And how are you? What you been up to?
I'm great, man. Great to see you boys again. Yeah, you know what it is? My daughter dances in Harlem on the weekends sometimes at this great facility there, the National Dance Institute. Her mother teaches there, whatnot. So once in a while, I'll go in early. I'll get a good street spot on the Harlem side. I'm like, wow, the Yankees are on it. You know, they're playing at one at the stadium. And then I'll walk over on foot over to the stadium, and just me and like my backpack, and I'll buy a standing room ticket, single, and I'll kind of run around low key by myself, just all around the stadium, wherever I want to go. You know, I generally head out to the bleachers sort of first, or out to dead center, hang out there. Then I'll go upstairs and I'll run around. It's just a vibe, man. I mean, it's good to get your steps and walking around, and I just love the energy at the stadium. So I think that's one of those crazy nights I was rolling solo. I do get, you know, some good seats too. I got some Steinbrenner friends and all of that. Oh, so they're very good to me. Yeah, the legends are the best. I mean, come on. But it is fun to just go rogue and just run around. And I first learned the standing room thing in Boston when I went to school there. They were, I think, one of the first stadiums to really establish like real standing room sections and that white line. And it's great. I mean, you can go anywhere. You know, it's a license to go anywhere. If they chase you out, you move on to the next section. It's all good. So I'm good. Thank you. I just wrapped up a long summer working on a new musical that we're transferring to Broadway next year. And just rocking and rolling, man. Good times.
Yeah, so we'll certainly get to rock and roll, man. But listen, you're all over the place. You're running through New York City, which is no surprise. curious, have you paid attention at all to the new season and the reboot of The Real Housewives of New York City? And do you keep in touch with any of the old housewives from the show?
Good question. Well, I was at the launch of Luann and Sonia's sort of sideshow.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. We all connected. Everyone was there. Ramona, Sonia, Luann, all the sort of adjacent people. And we had a good time. You know, I remained close with all the girls. You know, all of that. It's just funny to me because, you know, I've been me a long time, and, you know, I never was one to talk about who I'm hanging out with or who I'm friends with necessarily. It was really them that finally brought it up on the show.
I mean, you were a big storyline on the show. Huge.
And then and then, you know, I think if they only ran with that, then maybe they'd still be doing their show with their original cast, but they got a new cast in. I don't think it's grabbing hold yet. It's tough. You know, the girls are beautiful and very accomplished, and it's a slick production, but you know, audiences are so finicky. You know, they want what they know. They love those ladies. It's tough with unscripted stuff because after a few years, you know, you're like, well, I want more money, this, that, and the other. You know, one's getting paid more than the other, and it becomes a little bit of a mess. And it ain't too scripted, if you know what I mean. It's not too unscripted, if you know what I mean. So we're all friends. Actually, Luann and I ran into each other again a couple weeks ago out, and I spoke to her the other day. She was spending the weekend out east, and she's got a bunch of tour dates coming up with her big cabaret show. So
what do you think is the better song, Feeling Giovanni or Money Can't Buy You Class?
I think the latter is the one that slaps the most, you know, live. I've done a few of her shows as a special guest. She doesn't do that as much anymore. So her show is actually really good, especially if you're a fan of the show. I don't think she's going to try to convince anyone she's this great singer or anything like that, but it's crafted very well. It's got a beginning, middle, and end. It's a real cabaret. It takes you through, it's almost like a diary, mm-hmm. and it's done really well. And she's playing big theaters. Like, she sells, you know, believe it or not, I thought it would be like all, you know, like a big gay following that she had, right? You know, I was like, oh my God, I know my gays love this show, love her, she's a diva. No, it's all like hot women.
Oh, you gotta get out to the next show.
Like 30 and 40 somethings having some Chardonnay, checking out, you know, the Countess, and dude, I was getting a lot of follows, a lot of DMs from girls that would see me at the shows, and I was like, damn, all right. So maybe that's why she stopped booking me.
You're taking attention away from her.
I think so.
We need Joe to become, to get your role on the new Housewives, but New York City, or maybe infiltrate in New Jersey Housewives or something. I'm sure you got some connections there, but.
Yeah, I do. I know. Well, some of them are in my town over here. So yeah. We're close by. Joe and Melissa, they live in Franklin Lakes. Their daughter and their son go to Ramapo High School, where my daughter will be in a few years. And so I see them at some football games and stuff like that. They're good people, yeah.
Yeah, we went to one of Joe's comedy shows. We were backstage with another comedian. He was with Mike Marino. So we got to meet him. Nice guy. And, you know, Joe's got to stick together. That's what I always tell Joe.
So, yeah. And they even do like a sort of dad's live
show.
I'm
on my wife once, so it's pretty funny.
Oh, okay. They should bring me out to gossip
if they ever do the they're always talking about doing a Real House Husbands of New Jersey show. Would you consider being a cast member on that, or would you consider doing any more reality TV, whether it's competition wise or more of this like unscripted?
Great question. I got asked recently to be on a show that shoots in Atlanta. You know, I entertained them with a couple of meetings, and they definitely really wanted me to be on it, but it wasn't for me, this particular one.
It's too much, right? Traveling back and forth, especially with your daughter.
Well, yeah. I mean, it you know, when you don't know how long you're going to be there, and, you know, there's not much pay involved. So it's about like, if and when you really engage on the show and impact on the show, how long you'll be on there and opportunities that may or may not come thereafter, you totally have to go into those things knowing that, right? So it just felt like a crapshoot to me. But absolutely, I was developing a show recently with a great production team, my brother and I, doing more like an American Pickers style, kind of rediscovering the Catskills of our youth, and, you know, picking our way through the mountains. And we love that stuff. Our grandparents came to the Catskills, 100 years ago. Wow. And, you know, so we were going up there, you know, as kids in the 70s and 80s, and my parents grew up there, you know, themselves as children. So we love it up there, and we know it very well. And of course, there's been a big boom of hipsters moving up there and such. So there's just these great pockets of arts communities and yuppies and great, you know, antiquing and just great summer living for sure. So we were working on something like that, that we've kind of put a little pause on. Things are tough now with the strike, you know.
Yeah.
You want to be careful, because I'm an actor first, you know, right. And you want to be careful of like what you do and what you don't do and what you entertain. So yeah, I mean, I love unscripted. I love more like a docuseries type of style, not so much like, hey, I'm going to throw a drink on you kind of thing.
I think that you would be great on Celebrity Big Brother. I think you'd go with the flow. You know, nobody really be bothered by you. I always tell Joe, he should go on Big Brother. Is that something you might entertain?
You know, for whatever reason, and the people that watch that show are psychotic for that show, right? I've never gotten into it. So I don't really know the ins and outs of it. And I know you have to really know gameplay. Survivor, the first many years, I thought was one of the best shows ever. It was just so well done in the early years, right? And I think it's probably still really well done. So that was more my style show. I liked that. Big Brother, I didn't get it. I never really invested time into it, though. So I think I need to watch a couple of seasons of it to see if it's for me or not. But maybe that's better.
Yeah, you go maybe into it, no expectations, and you kind of just go with the flow.
Right. I think at the end of the day, it's ultimately about making alliances, right?
Yeah.
And well, listen, then voting.
Constantine, there's a good chance that the CBS executives are listening because they send all the evicted house members to our show on the podcast.
Is that true?
So if they're listening, listen, Constantine, Celebrity Big Brother, you might be bringing it back in February because of the writer's strike. But I don't know. We'll see.
Obviously is family. Frankie Grande is a dear friend. And who else was on there?
He performed well on the show too.
Yeah, he's done really well on there. But he was like a super fan of the show and then went on the show. And then I've known a couple people that have been on there. I would entertain something like that. That sounds fun. Or, you know, back in the day, they would, you know, Dancing with the Stars or stuff. Like we had chatted with them a couple of times. It just didn't work out. And then I guess my name didn't pop back up again. Since I did do a Masked Singer live. Now they have, when the show like really blew up, they started doing a live tour, believe it or not, where they'd go to each city. With the show is very different. There's no judges and all that. The audience sort of has to try to figure out who the celebrity is in each city, right? Often it would be like a sports star or like a news person local to that, you know, Boston or Cleveland or Chicago type of stop. But Natasha Bedingfield, an incredible pop star, she was hosting. It was a great tour. And I happened to be on tour in Boston. So it worked out where I could go and do a night with them at the Wang Center, which is one of the great theaters.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. So I was like, maybe
you sang Journey? Or an original?
Sang Taylor Swift.
Ah, beautiful.
Shake It Off.
Constantine, did you and your daughter go to the MetLife Stadium Eras Tour concert?
No. It's funny, you know, obviously Taylor is incredible. I interviewed her when she was first, and I was trying to find the interview. So anyone listening, if they can find the interview with she and I hosted a show on what was then called Fox Reality Channel, which was exactly what you think it is. Mainly it was like at the height of Idol. Like I was on season 4, so season 5, 6, 7, 8, you couldn't put enough content out there on the show. You know, it was, social media worked very differently then, but you know, there was TV Guide, there was Yahoo, there was a VH1 show, there was an MTV show, you know, like there were before the shows, after the show, you know, Fox Reality started their own network to rerun old reality shows of theirs, and in particular Idol. And I hosted a show where I was one of the co-hosts, and I had the Kardashians on backstage, and I had Taylor Swift, who had just sort of really hit the scene. So she's 30 now, right? Or even 32, did I hear? So this has got to be,
like 33, 34.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, so she was still a teenager. So it had to be, it wasn't 20 years ago, because that would
have, 14.
But definitely like 16, 17 years ago. Wow. And I was struck by how just striking she is, and tall and really beautiful. And even as she was just like a teenager, I was like, wow, this girl is like a, she looks like Charlize Theron. She's a movie star. And I've followed her, and she's an incredible artist, an incredible pop star. My kid's not like super geeked out on it though.
All right.
You know, she's obviously she thinks it's cool, but she wasn't like, we have to.
She's more of an Olivia Rodrigo, or she's more yeah,
how
her
is,
musical
how is,
style.
How has your daughter's music taste changed through the years as she's getting older and getting into high school?
Great question. Yeah, she's in seventh grade now. So I think whatever is like sort of trending in like the top 20 is what, like what she's one of those types. She's kind of like I was as a kid, like whatever is like the hot song on MTV for me was like what I was into. Obviously I also leaned heavily into like rock, but whatever the big pop songs of the moment were, I was listening to. She often says she's singing along to stuff. She doesn't even know who it is. She just knows that it's on like, you know, her Alexa playlist or a TikTok trend. She's not even necessarily looking at who it is. So I find that interesting. She loves Taylor. She thinks she's cool, but she's not like, we have to go. Rodrigo, yeah, she loves the songs, but she's not like, we have to go, which is interesting. I haven't had to like battle that. We do a lot of sort of fun stuff together. We go to shows and stuff. I just think she's like, yeah, whatever. I mean, it's just a concert. Like, why would I want to stand in like, you know, the nosebleeds and like
I never
see
went
a little
to a
speck
concert
on
until
stage.
I was like 22. So, you know, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I went with my wife. You know, we went, first concert to was Rihanna, and we had Taylor Swift twice. We went to Train two times. I don't
know. Train, that's a good show. That's a real.
Constance, you ever been to or played at the PNC Bank Arts Center? I mean, we went to Train there. It was pouring rain. It was like horrible to sit to drive. I was soaked, but listen, it was a great show.
If you can be under the band.
Yeah, we were underneath,
good.
But you know, we still had a walk and everything. But yeah, I wanted to go to the Taylor Swift concert, but just didn't work out timing wise or financially to be able to get those.
Yeah, that's
tickets.
The other thing. It's like, no, I'm not paying that kind of money for that. So I will tell you this, you know, I work with this promoter. He's a dear friend, Marcus Lineal, and he has Marcus Lineal Presents and also something called Fun Music Presents. He founded the band Jessie's Girl, which is like this mega 80s tribute, among many, many others. So shout out Marcus. And he, you can easily find all of his acts on socials. They do like a big 90s night in the city with the Fresh Kids of Bel Air. Anyway, he ingeniously started a Taylor tribute.
Oh, that's great.
That is selling like crazy. It's called Let's Sing Taylor. And my friend Emily Victoria, amazing songwriter, she performs with me in my solo band. She plays guitar, keyboard, she sings, she dances, she's gorgeous. She plays Taylor. And it's exactly what you think it is. Like, it's a 2-hour Taylor Swift tribute, but she's got like all the mannerisms down. She comes out with the guitar, the strutting, the bodysuit, and she's selling out 2,000 seaters. He's killing it. And I'm like, of course you started this. So I think I'll take Milena to go see Let's Sing Taylor rather than the actual real Taylor, because it's more in my price range.
Eventually, I'm sure the Taylor Swift life story will come to a place you're very familiar with, and that's Broadway. Of course, back in the Broadway scene here, back in the musical scene, I should say. Rock and Roll Man got rave reviews. How did that come about for you, that opportunity? And how long did it take you to get hair and makeup done? Because you look very different.
Very transformed. Yeah, you'll have to pull up a picture of it or something. But, you know, I've been working on the show a couple of years in development. Rose Keola, amazing Broadway producer, and I collaborated with the other creative team members, and just really proud of this piece. We had an incredible run all summer long at New World Stages, which is an incredible off-Broadway house for new works predominantly. And it's actually where I started Rock of Ages 15 years ago. So we started there off-Broadway in the 400 or 500 seater. And then we And then we transferred it to Broadway in 2009, and it ran, you know, whatever, 8 years, and it became a big hit all over the world. So Rock and Roll Man sounds similar, very, very different. It's the story of Alan Freed. Alan Freed was a great crusader and essentially the first white DJ during segregation in the late 40s to start playing black music on popular radio. And he coined the phrase rock and roll. He elevated the great artists like Little Richard and Chuck Berry, Laverne Baker. He promoted desegregated shows with, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard. No one could fathom the two of them appearing on stage together into the 1950s. And he was a complicated man. He drank himself to death by 43 years old. So I play Alan Freed, and yeah, you would see me in the whole 1950s get up. He was an incredible figure in the history of rock and roll, but also sort of forgotten. You know, he was in the first class inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but you know, he didn't play long. He got accused of this payola scandal and great drama. And he was a real disruptor. You know, he was like a real rock star. He was the king of rock and roll long before Elvis. And he and Little Richard were very close. So our show, Rock and Roll Man, tells the story of Alan Freed on basically the last day of his life. You know, on his deathbed, he sort of flashes back into this fever dream kind of scenario where he's on trial for his legacy and all the work he's done and if he'll be forgotten and remembered or not. It turns out, you know, there would be no Beatles. There would be no Bee Gees. There would be, you know, no Rolling Stones without Alan Freed and the work that he did. So we love our show. It features all the songs of the era that everyone loves, you know, Good Golly, Miss Molly, Tutti Frutti, The Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. But it's got a great original score as well, which allows me to kind of sing within the character bubble of the show. And we had an amazing run off Broadway, and we're working on transferring it next year to Broadway. So you'll hear about it soon enough. And
Tony Award is on its way, Joe.
Well, you know,
absolutely,
hey,
love that.
There's a couple of nominations on the wall over there. I'd love to put an actual trophy up there. So that would be kind of funny at some point.
I always said this to Joe when we heard the news that the Phantom of the Opera was closing. I said,
yeah,
you know, Constantine could have saved that musical. I know you guys had talks at times to get you in there, but you would have been fantastic in that. But I guess you're very like typecasted when it comes to Broadway.
He's the music guy.
Yeah, you know,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, I think my old manager used to say it's a good thing you were on American Idol. It's a bad thing you were on American Idol. You know, sometimes it's great. People know you. They have a sort of sense memory when they think of you. Oh, rock and roll, Constantine, Rock of Ages, American Idol. Yeah, I get it. Long hair. But, you know, I'm a Tony nominated, you know, best actor. I could do anything. You know, I can do whatever, a character role or, you know, a role that involves danger or comedy, whatnot. So, you know, you want to be a blank canvas, but it's also good to be known for things too. And yeah, Phantom of the Opera, I mean, what an iconic title. Definitely talked to them a little bit over the years. There was talk at one point that I was going to do it in French and take it to Paris for the first time. When they announced their closing, they did bigger business than they had ever done in many years. They were doing millions and millions. So I don't think it's going to be gone too long. It ultimately is a bit more of a baritone role, and I'm like a pure tenor. There's a couple of little things, but I really bring big excitement to like the high stuff in that. And I would love to play the Phantom one day for sure. And thank you. You know, I did Jekyll and Hyde. So I guess that was sort of like my venture into that contemporary but classical musical theater, you know, with a little rock and roll, but not Rock of Ages rock and roll, but just, you know, musical theater is it can be anything now. I mean, you have Pasek and Paul, probably the greatest writing team out there right now. They did Dear Evan Hansen. They wrote all the songs for The Greatest Showman, which mm-hmm. were covered by everyone. Pink. I mean, yep. they became huge hits, you know, all those songs. So it's not Oklahoma anymore. It's pop music for sure. Mm-hmm. And you had Britney this summer on Broadway. You have a show like And Juliet, which is a great show. All the songs by Max Martin, by Katy Perry, you know, Kelly Clarkson. And it tells the story of Shakespeare and his wife trying to complete Romeo and Juliet, but it's just called And Juliet. And it sort of picks up like if Juliet didn't kill herself when Romeo commits suicide. So it's pretty ingenious, and they use all the great songs. And a show like Shucked that I saw recently, which I was actually blown away by, Shane McNally. He's a huge country writer. I mean, he's written some of the biggest pop songs, and he was on that show Songland, which was a great show, short-lived. You can find probably on YouTube. It was like The Voice, but with songwriters. Adam Levine was one of the creators on it. The singer from One Republic, he was on the show, and Shane was on the show. So Shucked was awesome. I was like, this is totally original. This is not the musical theater I grew up with, man. This is crazy. So it can be anything now. Maybe there'll be a good sports show. Like I would love to see like a great sports related show. You know, you had Damn Yankees, but you know, 60 years ago, and that's in talks to come back, but I wonder if there can be a great show about sports. You know, there's an Ali musical I heard in the works. That's tough. That would be tough, but maybe. Rocky, they had Rocky 10 years ago. Didn't really fly, but it was pretty cool. It was a cool attempt.
Sword. I liked it.
I liked it too, you know? I mean, it was just massive, right? I mean, there's like the biggest show anyone could ever see, but it just didn't land.
Very funny, didn't land. when you were talking before about your role now as Alan Freed and all the great disc jockeys of the middle 1900s, he was really instrumental in making Tutti Frutti and all those songs the biggest at the time that they could be. So I wanted to talk to you about your new singles and your new songs, Daydream and Comeback. The feeling of being back in the studio, creating music, and why did you say to yourself, now is the time?
Oh, that's a great question, and thank you. You know, I've overcome a lot of personal stuff these last many years. Just prior to the pandemic, and then got sober in my life, and then went through that whole thing with the shutdowns and, you know, just like a lot of family stuff, right? And I think it was just about sort of getting back to basics, you know, circle the wagons, take care of mine, you know, stack good days together, whatnot. And it just, I felt really inspired to write again. So I put out a record in 2020 called Until I'm Wanted, which is a collection of like rock and roll love letter songs. And my single then, All About You, did well and at streaming and at digital and Sirius and such. I co-wrote that with Sam Hollander. He's a huge writer. He's written for Panic at the Disco and everybody. So I just wanted to kind of keep putting out new stuff. You know, I knew I was focusing on the acting project, Rock and Roll Man, but I just felt like I just want to always be productive. You know, whether it's a song that I have $1 million budget to get behind it, you know, to push it out there and market it, or not, or no budget. Daydream just felt really good. It felt like a fun summer, you know, earnest lyric and vocal. So we put that out. That's been doing well. Comeback. You know, sometimes you just write a song and it's got a lyric. It's not like, this is my comeback or anything like that. because like the song says, it's not a comeback if you never left, you know? And for me, I've always prided myself on like the long sort of like journey, right? The long, slow burn, rather than trying to be like up and down all the time. Like, I just want to always kind of keep climbing and doing like just good work along the way. And believe it or not, I'm celebrating like, you know, basically 30 years in the business, you know, and it's crazy. So, and more than half of that time, I've been in the public eye since American Idol in 2005, 2006. So, yeah, you know, just the songs felt good. They were co-writes. Myself and my writing team, Hey Monet, I work with a lot, Dan and Nate Monet. We wrote Come Back and Daydream together and produced them together. The third song, which will be out shortly as well, is called Pieces. And that's a bit more of a modern big rock production, like for me. I've sort of gone a little bit more stripped down in recent times, but this is like a big rock production song, Imagine Dragons style, really excited about that I wrote with Nate Walker, a great writer. He lives in Frenchtown, New Jersey, which I don't know if you guys get out that way. I love it out there, man. That's like the farmy sort of like Delaware River on, you know, the bridges to New Hope, Pennsylvania. It's just it looks untouched by time. It's like you could just see like red coats like marching down the street, man. It's like you can really see what it looked like then. And so I love it out there. But yeah, you know, just writing makes me feel good. It keeps sort of the journey going. You just kind of keep feeding the meter. But obviously I'd love one of these songs to really impact. You know, these days it's like if it doesn't engage on TikTok, it's like you got no shot, you know. So hopefully someone will pick up one of the hooks on like TikTok or something and it'll engage. But very proud of the new work and hope to get out there with the band and play some shows in support of the new music as well.
All right, stay tuned, follow Constantine all over the place. You won't miss it. Songs on Spotify, get it on TikTok. It's crazy how the music business has changed now.
Social
media, but what are you going to do? Last time you were on the show with us, and if anyone didn't listen to that episode, we encourage you to go back to do it. The whole origin stories of Constantine, how he got into music and eventually Broadway. I said to you, I said, they just announced they're going to make this movie. I said, they need to get you in the movie. Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 recently came out and you were not in it. I'm shocked. I mean, I thought you could have played like a good friend of Joey Fatone or something. Not really happy about that, but... Well, you know, have you given any thoughts to, you know, potentially early, you know, obviously you're in the strike now, but the big screen, the movies, you know, what is that process like for you to try to get those? I know, you know, for some reason they didn't put you in Rock of Ages as yourself, which made no sense.
Right.
I mean, what's the different process there for you and your agent there to kind of get you those auditions for movies and television as opposed to Broadway where you're established?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, I've always had people that believe in me and have gotten great opportunities for me since stepping off American Idol. I remember I was in the mix for that movie, The Factory Girl, which was about, you know, you know, the great art movement of like the 60s and there were a bunch of movies at the time. I was developing a TV show with Kelsey Grammer's company at ABC. And it just, sometimes it just doesn't work out. I remember testing for a big HBO show, you know, not long ago at all. And it's just like, you're like, oh, I'm getting this. And then just kind of don't get it, you know? So I've done my episodic work. I was on a soap, you know, I've done guest stars and such, and I've been up for big projects. It's just, sometimes it's just about closing, you know? Sometimes you might be too synonymous with another project. I think going back to what we said before, like, that's the guy from American Idol and everyone's going to think that, or that's the guy from Rock of Ages. But you know, it works for other people. Maybe they have a bit more of like a face that kind of can blend in or whatnot, but I've been up for big projects like that. So I think it's, you know, I'm grateful to have the opportunities. The rejection hurts more than it did years ago. That's part of the reason why I stopped like drinking and smoking and all of that stuff. I felt like I was getting in my head about things. Like, I'd have a meeting and it would go really well. The agent's like, I feel like we're getting an offer. And then like, I'd be like, all right, cool. You know, I'll meet the guys at the bar or I'll have a little puff. And I would just like get in my head about stuff. And I think when I started getting out of my way like that, things started to open up again. You know, I felt like I allowed the space to write music again. I allowed the space to develop a new show, you know, not settle on the fact that, oh, I'm the Rock of Ages guy. Like, I could create this like 1950s guy, you know, with short hair and who's kind of like dorky in Rock and Roll Man, and just keep doing good work, you know. But yeah, of course, Nia Vardalos, I know her. She was a big fan of mine on American Idol. I think, you know, that's an ensemble movie that they had so much success with the first one that like, they haven't strayed too far away from it. They basically use the same people in it and stuff. But of course, I would love to do something that highlights, you know, yeah, my heritage. But I'm not sure. The second one, I don't know, you know, how that one went. And the third one, we shall see. I remember they did a TV show version too, back in the day too. That didn't last very long. But Nia's very talented and she's a great writer. She wrote the whole thing as a one person show originally. And then Tom Hanks's wife saw, Rita saw the show, and then they turned it into this whole movie. So yeah, you know, for me, it's about like grinding out opportunities. Ultimately, it's like, if you get all the way down to the end, you're doing your job. Like, you can't do more than that. It's not like this guy was acted better. It's just out of your control. You just have to be like, psh. Because it's just matching. It's simply matching. I'm sure. And it's simply just matching, you know, and you get one or two of those, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's that guy. It's funny because I just worked with Joey Pantoliano, who's like has probably one of the most prolific film careers like of anyone. I mean, this guy's done 200 films and worked alongside everybody from day one, you know, from the Idol Maker, you know, the Idol Maker to Goonies to Eddie and the Cruisers to La Bamba, all the way to The Matrix, you know, The Fugitive, The Sopranos, everything in between. And we've talked at length. I mean, even a guy like that who's been in billion-dollar films, billions, you know, it can be tough. It can be tough, you know? So, that's why we do it, man. If it were easy, everyone would do it.
Okay, it's time for me to put you on the spot here.
Sure.
Let's say an opportunity comes along that's simply too good to pass up, right? Your hair is incredibly signature to you. Nick and I aren't as fortunate, but your hair is great. It's always been long. It's like something that you're known for. If an opportunity that was too good to pass up came along, would you consider cutting your hair for a specific role? And if that's not necessarily the case, how much money would it take for you to actually cut your hair?
No, I mean, absolutely. I would cut my hair off. No problem for my work and for a great role, and especially if it made sense, if it was not just to cut it. But absolutely, I look forward to that day that I, you know, need to do that. I mean, you know, they do so much with wigs now. I mean, I'm not going to start outing people, but there are wigs all over film and television now, and It's not like Morty's wigs from like you know, Goodfellas. They're perfect. They're very real, and some of the biggest movie stars are wearing them. So, but certainly, yes, I would cut my hair for the right part, and it wouldn't take much, to be honest. So, thank God I still got it. I just had a big birthday, and I got hat head now. But yeah, it's all real. The wig is holding up, and it's starting to gray a little bit in the sides here, but so far so good.
All right, there you go. I wasn't expecting that answer, Joe. I thought it was going to be, you know, afraid to part.
Yeah, well, usually people with longer hair, they have this like attachment to it. Literally,
I do.
Like, you do. Okay.
I do.
He can always grow it back. So
exactly, you grow it back. It grows
much faster than Nick and I can grow hair.
My hair grows pretty fast, Joe. I just like to keep it short. You know? But that's the way.
He doesn't. You don't have to shave though. No, I'm just kidding.
Nah.
He's like, I shaved like 5 days ago. It's coming in.
No, nah, I shaved today. So
all right, I got it.
Listen, we know that you have a great relationship with some sports media personalities. Of course, Craig Carton, the last week of his show, I said, Joe, I'm surprised Constantine hasn't popped up yet. You show up in studio to say goodbye. I personally think Constantine and Evan sounds better in the afternoons, but I guess they didn't want to consider you, or maybe you were typecast. This is a music guy. You can't do sports. So number one, would you have considered doing afternoon or any sort of sports talk show? Number two, do you think Craig made the right move? Obviously, financially he did, but we haven't really heard much of him recently in New York. So what do you think about the host scenario of Craig leaving radio where he was a legend to do TV?
Yeah, Craig is a dear friend. You know, I love him. I'm so proud of him and his recovery these last several years. I've gotten to know him really well, and his wife and the kids. So I have to say, I like the Carton Show a whole lot. I think it works. They definitely have settled into a really good stride. I think it works. I think he's so charismatic. It's a great sort of 1-2 punch with Undisputed. I mean, look, you know, it's so hard to find a big audience. It's not like the old days, you know, and I mean, we just have so much content at our disposal. Everyone just wants short, sweet, you know, flip, you know, swipe. And it's really tough to garner a big audience. But I get why Fox wanted him. He's a great presence. He's got a great voice. He could just go. And he's a great professional for sure. I mean, I do think the fan has a gigantic gaping hole in it right now without him. But I love how Spike has elevated a bunch of guys that were hungry, that put their time in, that are young, that were able to seize the opportunity and seize the moment. You know, a lot of the producers, you know, Tommy and Chris and whatnot. You know, I love what they're doing over there. So I always support, because it's just what I've known my whole life, 40 years listening to the fan. You know, I just, that's what I put on when I'm in the car, unless it's Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday and Howard Stern is on. You know, I've also gotten into like I got into Smartless. I'm not a big podcast guy.
Except for the You Know I'm Right podcast.
Except for you guys. But, you know, I mean, I'm talking like the ones that are like, I don't even know, the ones that everybody seems to just have to like, it's like trendy or something. Or you guys are trendy too, but you know, like, so I like Smartless because it's actors, you know, actors talking about actors, and I just dig it. But I can consume sports all day long and all night.
Yeah,
long,
I thought that you'd be a better choice to be with Carton than Cody Decker. I think you're a little more versatile when it comes to.
Well, yeah, I just think like Carton doesn't. I know he knows that, and he doesn't see me like that. Oh. And Cody recently he's with Michelle Beadle now, so he's got like a daily thing. I thought he was going to keep both, but apparently not. The new guy, I don't know who he is on the end, but he's good. He's good. And they've worked it out where he kind of, you know, Greg Jennings has really found a good place on there. Undisputed is a little out of control, you know, now.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Too much. Right. I think just Keyshawn and Skip would have been fine, you know? You know, and Stephen A. obviously is always going to have a...
Stephen A. and the Mad Dog on Wednesdays is the best.
That I tape. I love that.
It's good stuff right there.
Yeah, that's really good. But of course, I would love to do more sports content and definitely feel like I can hang and talk about it and just bring something different, you know, bring a real fan perspective. I see Nate Burleson over at Ramapo. He's still got one son at Ramapo playing ball, and we're buddies, and I see him in the stands, and I've sung the anthem a couple of times for them. And his oldest son is at Nevada, his alma mater now. And before he went off to college, they won the whole state championship in basketball. And without like one of their great players. And so I followed that ride. I sang the anthem a couple of times. It was lit. I know my friends make fun of me. They're like, why are you going to Ramapo games? I'm like, I love it. It's, I don't know. I get to stand on stage in front of thousands of people, like pretty much every night. And I'm like happy for these kids. And like, I want to know like where they're going to school. Like I live vicariously through them. My daughter plays competitive club soccer and tennis, and I hope she ends up playing at Ramapo. I mean, they're like a top 10 in the country soccer team, you know, and football. Like the football team is crazy. Like they're competing with the best teams on the East Coast now. And like with Don Bosco and Bergen Catholic, and it's fun, man. This kid's going, the quarterback last year is at Michigan playing for Harbaugh. Like he's getting time.
Yeah.
And he's playing wide out. And this quarterback's going to go to Harvard. He's got a full, and by the way, his brother's already at Harvard as one of the quarterbacks.
Impressive.
So they're going to have both of those guys. So it's just fun, man. But Carton's, I'm psyched for him. I'm psyched for his son who's playing a little college ball too. And hopefully there's, you know, he's getting his footing still there. He wants to establish himself before he starts, like, you know, but I would have liked to have had a shot. And who knows, maybe I still will.
At least once a week.
Well, I thought that would be cool. I also thought, like, back in the day, he used to pitch a million shows at once. Oh, yeah. Like, I was always like, dude, just be happy. Like, you're back. You got, you know, you're on TV again. You're on the show again. Even before that, he was trying to pitch a million different shows at once. I thought it'd be like one-on-one with Craig Carton, because he's got this great house, and now that he's got the job, like he's really able to take care of the house and pay back his debts and all that. And they have this great basketball court. Mm-hmm. So I was like, it would be awesome, like if you had like celebs come to the house or sport, and it's like one-on-one with Craig Carton, or they play horse,
yeah,
you know, or, and they just bullshit the whole time and like, and get really honest and like sit and maybe like barbecue afterwards and just really talk honestly about like great sports stories, you know? And he was like, whoa. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's produce it. We could do it easily. I don't know if he's doing the sober show still. Like he was for a minute, but now I feel like I don't hear it anymore.
He does it on Saturdays in WFAN.
Okay, so he pre-tapes it. Because they're going to do another, they're adding another one to the lineup. Another betting show, I heard, wow, that's like about recovery in the prime time.
Wow.
That's what I heard, but I don't know.
Well, while Psych Constantine, you're definitely a triple threat in every sense of the word. You know, music, acting, dancing, but really, I mean, look at this podcast, Joe. We started off with some entertainment reality talk, and then we talked about music and all this sports talk, high school. Who do we really talk about high school sports here? And Constantine could just do it all, and he's a very talented guy. Constantine, in your life or your career, whether it's, you know, your music career, your acting, or whatever it may be, what would you say is your, you know, right moment? What I mean by that is a time or place where you wanted to pursue something, you asked somebody for advice, maybe it was American Idol, and they said, this is an awful idea, don't do that. And you were like, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway. And ultimately, you'll see why it is that I'm right.
That's an awesome question. And I think it goes back to before all of that madness, not long before, but, you know, right out of high school, I was kind of floating around. I was playing in a band. I was going on auditions. I was working at a nursery, like full time, like a garden center. I was going to school locally, part time. I'm going to make it. I'm going to get signed, this and that. Right. But I was kind of floating a little bit. Obviously, I had a bunch of talent, but I wasn't able to really like apply it in the way I wanted to. Couldn't like get the record deal or the right tour. Couldn't get the right agent or the right gig, but it was like all right there. I did a big show with a bunch of Broadway stars like Billy Porter, who's huge, and a great director, and a bunch of like young Broadway types. It was an awesome production of Jesus Christ Superstar that was like gonna go to Broadway, right? We did it up in Nyack at the Helen Hayes Performing Arts Center, an amazing venue, like rave reviews, like this show was coming to Broadway, a big revival. It didn't. But all of these people worked on that show that became hugely like famous and influential. And a couple of them had graduated the Boston Conservatory. One of them, who I really admired, Drew Sarich, had just graduated in Showcase, and he was going to front this new gigantic Disney production of Hunchback, a brand new version of Hunchback, an adaptation of the movie with all these great Alan Menken songs. And they were going to do it in Germany, and then it was going to come to Broadway. And I was like, so envious. And I loved this guy because he could rock, but he was a great actor. And he's like, you should check out the Boston Conservatory. You should get out of here. You need training. Like, you're so talented, but like you need to like immerse yourself in it. And that advice was everything to me. Like, I did look into the school. I did audition. I did go. I used that opportunity like to the max. I was gigging with Berklee College of Music people. I took classes there. You know, I was going to showcase. I had an amazingly talented class, beautiful girls. I was one of the straight guys at a school with beautiful girls. We had a great time. And so like that sort of set me on this path, you know. 9/11 happened my final year there. I lost my first cousin, Gus, which I cannot believe is like well over 20 years now. And so I didn't showcase, but I kept on my path. I kept on my plan, and things started to happen. I was an apprentice at the Williamstown Theater Festival. I met Michael Greif, who cast me in Rent. I was in Rent. I had my band on the road. From Rent, I got into Idol, and then Idol, Rock of Ages. So things just started to click after that. But it was really like listening to a peer that I really admired. And I would have never thought of that. I would have never thought to do that otherwise. You know, I would have just been like, no, I'm going to keep grinding and auditioning. But like, I humbled myself, and as my friends were like coming back from college and already getting like internships, and you know, daddy was hooking them up with whatever, I was kind of going away for the first time at like 22, 23, you know. I had 22, gone part-time, and once I immersed myself in it, everything changed. So that really was where it started. Like, and that, I think that's probably the best piece of advice or the, you know, the thing that sort of clicked for me.
Awesome stuff. Constantine, we appreciate your time as always. Nick, I'm going to give you a nice long list, and you're going to tell me what these names have in common with Constantine. You ready?
Oh God.
Kyle Chandler, Bobby Lee, Flo Rida, Dougie Fresh, Phil Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Jose Ramirez, Austin Matthews, and Alex Ovechkin. What do they have in common with Constantine?
All Fargos?
Constantine, did you figure it out?
I think Kyle Chandler and I actually have the same birthday. Am I crazy?
There we go.
Wait, all of them are on the same day?
All of them are on the same day. That's a really, really...
By the way, we're taping this 2 days after Constantine's birthday. So happy birthday, Constantine.
Happy birthday, Constantine.
Wait, give it to me again. Okay, so Mahomes, Ovechkin, Kyle Chandler.
Right. Bobby Lee, the comedian. Dougie Fresh, the rapper. Flo Rida, obviously. Phil Jackson, the greatest NBA coach of all time. Yeah. Austin Matthews and Alex Ovechkin. You got two NHL superstars on your birthday. Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback of this generation. Jose Ramirez, baseball player, plays in Cleveland.
Yeah.
One of the best players in the American League.
Yeah.
That's a really, really
impressive birthday. I thought Joe's birthday was impressive. It was him, George Steinbrenner, the situation in America. But
America. Situation's on July 4th also.
July 4th, baby, yeah.
Constantine's got all the stars here.
Constantine. Hey, listen, it's the night September 17th is a birthday for the stars. Constantine, you are a star. So we'll tie this in together because I know that you are a Virgo, right?
By the way, I just connected with some girl on on Raya.
That's the celebrity Tinder right there.
That was on Friday Night Lights. So I can't tell you. I'm excited because that show. I'm excited. Yeah, she seems really great too. I'm not really into actors, but like to be honest,
Friday Night Lights. I
think it's got to be Adrian. I mean, that's my guess, but I don't think it's Minka. I don't think it's Amy. I don't know. It's Connie Britton.
I would be all about Connie Britton.
Danielle Alonzo.
I feel like Connie Britton personality wise right up your alley between Friday Night Lights and Nashville and everything like that.
That little like smirk of hers, like oof. And she was in the original film too.
Right.
And which is great. And the book is great. And what a great show. I mean, I think that might be the last great scripted network television show. It was almost too good, like where it wasn't dumbed down enough for people to like find an audience. Like it was too good. Pete Berg should have had that. That should have been like on AMC or something or you know, early on, but it was so freaking good. And think of the actors that have come from that show. I mean,
absolutely. I think you're totally right. I don't think it doesn't get nearly enough praise as some other network shows out there. But like I mentioned,
Chicago Fire, you know, it's like
everything. My mom loves Chicago Fire.
Yeah, of course she does. You know what I mean, though? But it's like a procedural. It's a procedural, right. Which is like, it's like cookie cutter and it's got great cast, but it's like, you know, Friday Night Lights was so well written. Oh, jeez. Anyway, it was like The Wire, but on like, on TV.
It was one of the best shows of all time.
Anyway,
Constantine, we appreciate your time as always. You know how this works. We're going to give you the last word. So is there anything else you would like to share, promote, go right ahead. And if you want to share what Friday Night Lights started was when we're done with this.
I think you named it too,
but for the purposes of this podcast, you don't have to reveal it. But again, we give us some last words here because we had a lot of fun again with you.
All right, we'll check it out. Okay, this has not been the greatest year so far for my sports teams, but it's a process. It's a process. I believe in my Yankees. We're still in it as of the drop date of this podcast. You know, we're just a few games from the wild card. We basically need to win out. I do believe in Cashman. I do believe in Boone. I'm probably the only guy that does. So I love the youth movement. You know, a couple of moves. You know, they've had health problems this year. A couple of moves in the offseason. The Japanese guy, maybe a Bellinger. Maybe make a big splash for Trout. Elevate the youth. Maybe move Cole. Maybe.
I've been telling Joe, move Cole. Get some good prospects back.
Eat some of the money, lead with the Japanese guy. And Rodon has actually turned it around. You know, I like Schmidt. I like King. They always put together a great bullpen. You know, Dominguez will not be back for a year, but that guy is a stud. I don't care what anyone says. He wasn't just flashing. He's the real deal. And I love the youth. So They'll be back and maybe still maybe just maybe make a little run this year. Giants got off to obviously a very, very rough start, but lucky bounces, a monsoon. Okay, a monsoon. You're down 3-4 touchdowns to start the game before Dallas even takes the field, it seems. They got lucky. They didn't show up. And then it was just like, you can't play from behind. It's like Madden. It's like when you're playing Madden, you know, and the AI just, it's over. You're down, you know, there's an interception. There's a punt return. It's over. Okay? It just keeps piling on. Dallas is not as good as they were that night. I mean, their offense struggled, actually.
Yeah.
And the Giants are not as bad. And that was clear in week two, even though they didn't show up for a half. But that second half, Daniel, is the Daniel that I know and I love. And I think we're still going to have a really good season. It's only year two of Dable. You know, it's really year three and year four that I'm really looking for, like, Super Bowl vibes. We got some money coming off. Like, we'll add some guys. But they're doing all the right stuff. So it's a fun time again for a New York sports fan like me. And thank you guys for having me. You know, I'm just one of the guys. You know, I love my sports. I love my ladies, and I love my work. And I love my daughter. And
yeah,
and
it sounds like me.
Yeah, that's all.
Listen,
that's it.
And all you gotta know is when it comes to the Giants, just, you know, clear eyes, full heart.
Let's
can't lose. So let's see what happens. Thanks, Constantine.
That's right.
We're here for this episode of You Know I'm Right for our very special guest, Constantine Maroulis, and my co-host, Joe Calabrese. I'm Nick Durst, and this has been You Know I'm Right.